Welcome to another episode of The Dambridge Report. I am not John Iadarola, and it is not JR Wednesdays. It is Friday, and I'm here also joined by Francesca Fiorentini.
Yeah, it's FF Fridays.
To make sure this all happens and goes down well, we will talk shortly about where John is. He has abandoned. He literally just left the studio because he's headed to a very important event, which we're going to get into off the top. But first of all, how's your Friday, kid?
I'm good. I mean, this week has been trash, obviously. Oh. The internet has been total trash for those of you who are on the internet or whatever. But I'm glad it's Friday.
We should do this. This is a good, like you said, the alliteration works. We got Francesca Fridays.
Exactly. Francesca Fiorentini Fridays.
Triple F's, man.
John's going out being Clark Kent. Like, we don't know. He lives this double life.
I'm going to change my name because I have JR Wednesdays, but I'm going to change my name to Wendell or something. We need the right.
Or change Wednesdays to Jwensdays.
It works even better. I think that'll pick up sooner than anything else will. More legal way to do it. We have a lot of things to talk about. Mm-hmm. Some inspiring things and also some things that make us wonder exactly where our nation is going when we may already see it anyway. But we can go ahead and get started right away, shall we?
Yeah.
Today, this Friday, they're starting with a global climate strike. That's also where John has taken off to go, as I was just mentioning. And it was all begun by a 16-year-old Swedish climate activist, as we've talked about many times on the show, Greta Thunberg. She was doing this on her own for a year or so beforehand, even before things were getting started. So this has built into a global phenomenon where protesters are taking to the streets in multiple countries. There are 4,638 events in 139 countries around the world now. And it's begun just today, and it's going to go for a week. So it's from September 20th through the 27th, right before they have their big global event over the week, starting on Monday. So we'll start with this weekend after the event, finish with more. So they're gathering at the United Nations for the Climate Action Summit on September 23rd. Where the countries are supposed to ramp up their ambitions to curb greenhouse gases under the 2015 Paris Climate Agreement. So as I mentioned, the second worldwide strike is planned for September 22nd, 7th, just afterwards. So I guess it's an inspiring thing to push something that's finally happening with the ideas that's going on with everything across the world. And some tweets that are going down from some of these events that have already begun. So as the day begins to stretch over the United States, DC is having their event, New York is also having their event. Our own Emma Viglin is at the event in New York. John is headed to the one in Los Angeles. This one is in Dublin, the Merrion Square, Dublin. The sheer number of people that we're already seeing there if you hadn't heard about it before it happened, someone may walk out of their apartment and go, what just happened in front of me?
Yeah.
So sometimes we have the dispute over climate change. Look at this in Freiburg, Germany.
Huge.
As things are going down and this is building across the world, even there were some tweets about how I believe there's an event in Afghanistan that people seem to be a little bit surprised about. This is a worldwide event where people are finally realizing what's going on.
Yeah, no, and that's a perfect example, the fact that there are protests in a place like Afghanistan where I think a lot of us are like, aren't there bigger issues than climate change to worry about? And yet, climate change, especially in the Middle East when it comes to drought and the refugee crisis, that has everything to do with why people are moving in addition to failed wars of occupation and counterterrorism. But I think that this is no longer an issue that it was even 5 years ago or 10 years ago when I was being politicized. You know, this is an issue that you don't have to be a crunchy Birkenstock wearing, you know, like white dreaded dude to care about, right? It's yeah. Like it's everybody, and primarily it's hitting people of color, the global south first.
Now we hear sometimes the opposition to it is that these scientists are being paid. These Democratic politicians and liberals are just pushing an agenda to get some money somehow. They still haven't fully told me how talking about the climate crisis that's happening right in front of our faces actually makes money versus fossil fuel companies and polluters and large corporations that actually do have a direct monetary involvement in denying what's going on.
Right.
So if that's getting pushed just for American politicians, understand that this is now global. I'm not sure if they're talking about how these Democrats have taken over the entire world and convinced enough people to think that something serious is happening. So another tweet that's happened from Anil Dash, I believe we have this graphic, mentioning how every single kid on the city bus is talking about the climate strike, even crossing over kids who go to other schools who usually don't talk to each other. And they're also talking about storming Area 51, which is, of course, something that always has to happen if you're a kid.
That's next. the alien files are released.
That's the next strike. Which actually, I mean, we could talk about the UFOs that have been spotted before.
I mean, if they know how to solve climate change, like, I'm with it.
We're down no matter what.
They're just like, stop subsidizing the fossil fuel industry. Duh. We're like, oh man, I thought there was going to be some kind of vibranium under there.
So another scene from Jeremy Corbyn says, 100,000 here in London, thousands more around our country, and millions across the world. This movement will not be silenced. I'm here with a message. Labor will meet your demands for a green industrial revolution and real change. So this is what I wonder. And when this first came up and I heard about it, I was thinking, so what is the next step? What is the actionable thing that'll happen from activism, from just a 16-year-old kid from Sweden, to now it's spreading to different ages, from kids who can't vote yet to adults, and there's movements and organized events to make sure this is going down correctly. How is this going to lead now to the change that we need?
I mean, I think that this has always been the strategy, looking at how global leaders have been so much dragging their heels on this issue. So the strategy is pressure from the outside and obviously trying to push your leaders to sign on to the Paris Agreement or to re-sign up in our case, right? Since the US has bowed out of it. But the point is that it's been 25 years that the UN climate, I think the UN Special Commission on Climate Change has been trying to quote unquote solve climate change. And they've been dragging their heels this entire time. And I think about five years ago, activists around the world were waking up to the fact that our leaders are not doing anything. There's nothing to pressure them. And let's remember that the climate agreement, the Paris Climate Accord, which keeps global temperatures to well below 1.5 degrees of warming, which is already really, really bad. But we're on track once again to like 4 degrees warming, but definitely 2 in the next, I believe, like 10 years soon. There is no binding resolution in this agreement, meaning it's not like you get sanctioned if you, JR, the country, doesn't meet your climate emission standards or whatever it is, right? Unless if you don't curb your fossil fuels, there's nothing that the international community can do to you. So I think that's where the pressure really needs to be on, is how are we gonna actually hold countries accountable on the macro level? And then on the national level, you saw the way Jeremy Corbyn is pushing green jobs. You see the way AOC and Bernie Sanders are pushing things like the Green New Deal. And then you see the ways that Dianne Feinstein, you know, rolls up a little poster of a small 8-year-old and is like, that's cute, darling, go home. So that is the battle that we're fighting, is how to transform our economies on a national level and how to hold these international actors accountable.
I think when it comes to politicians and their power to legislate and implement certain strategies and laws to make sure that we do curb our effects, it has to be. Someone asked me before if they think the AOC movement and the liberal and progressive movement is a real deal. And honestly, it has to. So AOC was put in office, and I think it needs to be a confirmation election first. So like after this one came in and she goes through her first term, there needs to be another wave of the same type of candidates, and in her and others like her being reelected. And that will prove to stubborn politicians who generally don't have much of a, they're not pushed very easily unless they're paid, obviously. They need to know that their jobs are at risk unless they do something. Because until then, they have no reason to believe so. Yeah. We've got Republican politicians that won't even do anything on guns until they won't even read any policies about any kind of even as minor as background checks on guns until their dear leader, the president, accepts something. They won't even consider it. So when it comes to things like climate change, it has to be proven to politicians, you're gonna lose your job, because that's what you care about, and your money, unless something changes here.
Absolutely, and these are the climate voters of the future and our future representatives.
Yep. They can talk about the youth, they can talk about these stubborn millennials, but the thing is, those are the people that are gonna be voting for you to stay in office as time goes on.
For sure.
So John will be down there, maybe we'll check out some things from him today. Also, Emma in New York, I mean, you might bump across him, say hi. Flash your sign. I don't think John has one. Help him make one. So we'll come back next with an interview with Alberto Cairo, back on the Damage Report, to talk about something that I wasn't really sure was a real deal, but it's the misleading nature of charts and graphs. Mm. We'll be right back.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Welcome back to the Dambridge Report. It is with J.R. Jackson. And it is Francesca Fiorentini Fridays. Woo. Love it. Let's make this happen. And Francesca, we're going to speak with an interview right now, shall we?
Yeah, we are. So bar graphs, pie charts, the racist bell curve, we're talking about visual statistics right now. Sometimes they can be incredibly helpful, and oftentimes they can be misleading. I know you weren't expecting this interview, but maybe this is the interview that you need. We are talking with Professor of Visual Journalism, Alberto Cairo. He's a professor at... Well, tell me where he's a professor at.
The University of Miami.
There you go. I knew that. Yeah. He is a professor at the University of Miami. Hello. It's sunny and lovely there as well. Professor, why charts?
Why charts? Why to write a book about charts
and how charts lie?
Well, because throughout, I have been teaching how to design charts for many years as a visual designer and as a journalist and doing charts, making charts for a living also. And throughout the years, I have observed how people systematically misread and misinterpret visual depictions of numbers, visual depictions of data. And lately, I have also been observing how people all over the political spectrum are weaponizing charts. We throw charts at each other during arguments. So I wanted to write a book that explains how to become a better reader of charts and maps and graphs.
Can you give us like a recent example of a chart, maybe as we ramp up to this 2020 election? All the stats are coming in. I feel like I renounced stats after 2016's election.
I think that we all have a little bit. But we will find tons of numbers thrown around during the election and during the campaign, and we better be ready to deal with them. So, just think about the recent Sharpiegate controversy. Mm-hmm. It's like, why was Trump so obsessed about Alabama being part of the forecast? I think that in part it was because he couldn't read the graphics that he was shown during his briefs. And then he doubled down and he tripled down, insisting that he was right. When he was not right, there was only a very small chance during August the 30th and August the 31st that Alabama was going to be impacted at all by the storm, around 10%. And he sent his famous tweet on September the 1st, when the forecast was already towards the east, right? Another example would be the election maps that we all see, right? So if you, for example, take a look, think about the results of the 2016 presidential election shown in a county level map. It looks like an ocean of red with a few splotches of blue here and there, right? And many people, particularly on the right, use that map to argue that Trump won on a landslide just because there is so much red and so little blue, forgetting the fact that that Democratic vote tends to concentrate in highly populated areas, densely populated areas, and Republican vote tends to be a little bit more distributed all over the country, right. And Republican counties are much more sparsely populated. But that's how people misinterpret and misuse charts all the time. And again, it happens all over the political spectrum.
Alberto, so when it comes to charts, there may be some that are misleading, as you were saying, or make people think something that may not be the full picture. Is there a certain kind? We're talking charts and graphs. Is there a certain kind that leads people to see things a certain way, or maybe someone will organize a chart to make sure that it's kind of doesn't show how it is. Is there a style that someone may use to make this happen?
All charts can be misinterpreted. Actually, the first rule that I explain in the book to become a better chart reader is pay attention. So one of the myths that have been around for way too long is a picture is worth a thousand words. So we all tend to believe that if we see numbers depicted in a graph or in a chart or in a map, that those numbers are objective and that we can readily interpret them, even if we don't pay attention to them. And that is not true. One of the arguments that I make in the book is that a chart is a visual argument, or an argument made visual. Therefore, in order to read it correctly, we need to read the chart. So all charts can be misinterpreted. There are some of them that are more often misinterpreted than others, but all of them can be misinterpreted. Mm.
I think that's really interesting what you said about the Electoral College and in terms of the 2016 election. If you were to visualize the politics of the United States in a different chart, in a different way than just seeing that map of blue and red, and is it a purple map? Like, how would you redraw that so we can visually understand it?
There have been some experiments, ways to visualize the map a little bit better. And let me tell you, by the way, before I say this, that the county level map of election results is not wrong per se. It is only that it is not a map that was originally designed to let people see how many voters voted for this candidate or for this other candidate. The county level map was designed to show who won where, and that it's perfect for that. If you want to show the amount of people who voted for each one of the candidates during an election, there are better ways. For example, you could try to locate every single voter. That's something that can be done around the places where these voters voted, and then you will end up with a map with more than 120 or 160 million dots, and then you will geolocate them close to where they voted, and then you will color code them Democrat, Republican, or third candidate. All right, that will give you a better picture, because then you will see, for example, that vast swaths of territory in the middle of the United States are basically empty.
Right. So dots versus just blanket swatches of color might help us understand the population differences. That's really interesting.
And it's one of the alternatives that I propose in the book. And there are others. There are others using transparencies. There are many other ways not to mislead with that map.
Yeah.
Does this make people change their voting potential, their voting habits, or what they may do? Because a lot of times, like we see polling, even if a poll is misleading or if it's incorrect, people will change what they're going to do on voting day, on election day, because of things like this. Does it get this serious with charts?
Well, I mean, charts can certainly change our minds about many other many issues. I mean, for the worse or for the best. For example, if you see that your favorite candidate has a high probability of winning the election, you may be discouraged to just go to the voting booth just because that candidate is going to win anyway, or so you believe. Always forgetting that, and this is another point that I make in the book, that particularly when we deal with poll numbers, these poll numbers are usually surrounded by huge clouds of uncertainty. So when you see that, for example, that a candidate has, say, 60 or 70% chances of winning, you need to imagine that that's a range of probabilities, that perhaps the probability is between 50% and 80%, or even lower or even higher, right? It's like the problem many times with charts is that they show us, they look too sharp, they look too accurate, much more accurate than they really are.
Sure.
As readers, we can grow used to basically overimpose that uncertainty on all the charts that we see every day.
That's excellent. Thank you so much, Professor Cairo, University of Miami, Professor of Visual Journalism. His book is out October 15th. It is called How Charts Lie, Getting Smarter About Visual Information. Get it, read it, chart up, smart up. Thank you so much, Professor.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
All right, we will be right back. We're going to take a break right now. And when we come back, we are talking about a whistleblower inside of, once again, the intelligence community. Stay tuned. So it appears that when Trump said that he would once again welcome foreign help with his campaign, he wasn't lying. A whistleblower inside the intelligence community has indicated to the Inspector General that the president may have made promises to a foreign entity in exchange for collecting intel on an opponent. In this case, good old Joe Biden, Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden. Now, we don't know exactly what the whistleblower has said because Trump officials are actually preventing Congress from finding out what the complaint was. But we know it has something to do with the country of Ukraine and Joe Biden. Now, I want to read a tweet from the senior advisor to Ukraine's interior minister who says, I don't know if it's a tweet, I believe it's a quote, who says, clearly Trump is looking for compromat to discredit his opponent Biden, to take revenge for his friend Paul Manafort, who is serving 7 years in prison. We do not investigate Biden in Ukraine since we have not received a single official request to do so. So there you have a senior advisor to the interior minister of Ukraine saying, we haven't been asked, but we know he's asking. The president's asking, we haven't been asked. What does the president himself have to say about it? Take a listen to what he said.
It's a partisan whistleblower. I shouldn't even have information. I've had conversations with many leaders that are always appropriate.
On that point, did you discuss Joe Biden, his son, or his family with the leader?
It doesn't matter what I discussed, but I will say this. Somebody ought to look into Joe Biden's statement because it was disgraceful, where he talked about billions of dollars that he's not giving to a certain country unless a certain prosecutor's taken off the case. So somebody ought to look into that, and you wouldn't because he's a Democrat. I don't know the identity of the whistleblower. I just hear it's a partisan person, meaning it comes out from another party.
Joe Biden during the conversation?
I don't want to talk about any conversation.
Right, so that's the president responding to claims that there is a whistleblower in the intelligence community. I feel like he's Pinocchio, but instead of his nose growing longer, his bronzer just gets darker and darker.
It's amazing. What's going on? Is this the thing with the lights again? Because he said he wants to, remember you talking about changing the light bulb standards,
sure.
Because the new ones make him look oranger. But this one's, he's kind of like, he had the, I don't know, it's like when you run out of the correct color, so you choose whatever last one CVS has. So like, I'll go with the darker one.
Just okay. Like, if there was nothing else, I know, yes, some concrete things came out of his meeting with Kim K, but like, also some bronzer tips would have been helpful.
This is amazing.
In that situation.
But I guess to what he said, first of all, it's a partisan whistleblower, meaning have to do with another party, in case you didn't. In case you didn't learn what Trump just learned, the meaning of partisan.
In case you didn't know that all facts are partisan. And if they're not in favor of him, then they're clearly against him, therefore it's fake. But what's great about that is that instead of being presidential and actually saying that there was, he hadn't heard about this and absolutely, you know, should be taken seriously and doing anything that you would assume a president would be, he doesn't deny that there is a whistleblower. He just says, if there is, or I can tell you that it's a partisan person. This person is out to get me. Which is essentially just confirmation that this whistleblower exists and that this information is probably very damaging.
And if there's anything, and also they're blocking for the information to come out. Adam Schiff, of course, wants all the info to come out to find out who it was. And when so much gets hidden and covered up, you begin to wonder what it is that they're trying to hide when it comes from everything with this president, from the tax returns to everything else that he's hidden from plain view because he doesn't want us to know exactly what he's saying. But he'll tell us, trust me, it's on the up and up. No matter what I've done or said or this whistleblower is saying I've done and said, it's all fine. And we're just supposed to believe him. That's how dictators work. Don't listen to the facts. You can't learn any of the facts. I'm going to block those from happening. Just listen to what I say.
Right. I mean, I think, and the main thing that we're taking away from the way that officials are talking about this is that even if there is a whistleblower, even if something was promised, like you're saying, it's on the up and up because I'm good, everyone else is evil. I'm the strong man and I'm the president, so I can do this. Don't you trust me? No, because there's things like rule of law. And if you're like backhandedly, I mean, the embarrassment I feel. Because it might have been even really, like we know, a lot of Trump's statements are just so off the cuff. Like, hey, who knows? If you look into Biden, maybe there'll be something in it for you. Like, even if it was that, right?
Yep.
And someone was like, I think I'm gonna say something about this incredibly just facile comment that the president made. But okay, so of course, the president's the president's lackeys have gone to bat for him. In this case, his personal private counsel. It's unclear what his role is, but Rudy Giuliani went to bat for the president over the whistleblower accounts inside the intelligence community. And once again, Giuliani struck out multiple times. Here he is on CNN. Take a look.
Biden said to the Ukraine, did you ask the Ukraine to investigate Joe Biden?
No, actually, I didn't. I asked the Ukraine to investigate the allegations that there was interference in the election of 2016 by the Ukrainians for the benefit of Hillary Clinton, for which there already is a court finding.
You never asked anything about Hunter Biden. You never asked anything about Joe Biden.
The only thing I asked about Joe Biden is to get to the bottom of how it was that Lutsenko, who was appointed, dismissed the case against Antac.
So you did ask Ukraine to look into Joe Biden?
Of course I did.
You just said you didn't.
No, I didn't ask him to look into Joe Biden. I asked him to look into the allegations that related to my client, which tangentially involved Joe Biden in a massive bribery scheme.
Rudy.
Not unlike what he did in China.
Rudy.
You explain to me how the kid got $1.5
billion
from China.
I have no problem with you launching allegations. But just be careful about what you say. I asked you, did you ask Ukraine to look at Joe Biden? You said no. Then you went on to say that you did.
It doesn't matter. You try to filibuster once. Okay, so as I mentioned before, this is very, very similar to what happened on Chappelle's show. It's like the Chappelle show was like it looked into the crystal ball of our future to make sure we have now leaders and counsel to the president that will directly say. Remember when I always want to say Charlie Murphy when it was
Rick James.
Rick James. No, I didn't stomp on his couch. Yeah, I stomped on his couch. And we're like, what just happened?
But Hillary Clinton made me stomp on his couch because Hillary Clinton orchestrates everything. Duh.
It's outrageous. So anytime you see Rudy Giuliani going on television, particularly like CNN, to have a battle and push back against the lib ideas, you know he's going on there for a lie fest and is going to find himself in some kind of pretzel. It's easy to get caught up in a lie when it's all you do. Because every question that's asked has to be explained, then explain the next one and the next one. And now we have this mess.
Can we just say, I'm sorry, I don't know how to explain what that clip was and what Giuliani said, because it was just like senile nonsense that just devolved. The guy had talking points. It was like, steer this to Clinton, steer this to Clinton, steer this to Biden. I mean, remember, this is the same week that we're finding out that the US military is being put up in Trump hotels in Scotland, right? This is a day. This is a week where we're finding out that the Trump has directly once again made hundreds of thousands of dollars off of being president. I mean, this is just what we know about. So, I mean, when you throw Giuliani on the case, you've already lost.
The fact that everyone else has been fired for doing things that, particularly like have teed off Trump. And then he sends someone who continues to harm him every time he goes on television, like Rudy Giuliani. I'm not sure how it keeps happening. Now, the other part of this that I think CNN put together the timeline of, there was apparently, this is some of the vague details that apparently, hopefully, Adam Schiff can get some information out of. To find out exactly when the timeline went from him having the phone call that the whistleblower was incensed about enough to make the accusation or blow the whistle on him, to then how he's threatened to hold back some military funds or some aid to Ukraine unless they did what he wanted them to do, so investigate things about people like Joe Biden, because he's worried about anyone that's running against him. These are the type of things, and if you don't think that's cutting through all kinds of ethical and legal codes with America, I'm not sure which country you've been living in or if you've expected people to have. And if you're okay with it, flip it.
Yeah.
Call Joe Biden, which they keep talking about the illegal things he's done. By the way, Joe Biden is not my grandfather. I don't care. Investigate him. But we're not going to not investigate the president of the United States as he does all these things. And if put Hillary Clinton in that mindset, if Hillary Clinton was doing this and you couldn't find out the information, would you go, it's okay, it's just Hillary Clinton? Just put it that way and then see if you'd still have the same feeling.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be right back with former West Virginia State Senator Richard Ojeda. Thank you so much.
Welcome back to the Danbridge Report. As corruption explodes throughout our country, we have another instance of some backwards maneuvers that were happening. And to help us talk about it particularly happening, Richard Ojeda, a friend of the show, retired U.S. Army major, of course, former West Virginia State Senator and former congressional candidate for West Virginia's 3rd District, joins us to talk about a particularly personal case. First of all, how are you doing, Richard?
I'm doing pretty good.
Excellent, excellent. Even after all these things that have happened, I want to jump right into it because let's just set up really fast. Apparently, your medical records were stolen. This is during the election that we just ran last year. And I guess the reasons behind it, we're still yet to find out. Maybe you've gotten deeper. Can you tell us what happened?
Well, basically, my medical records all of a sudden were photocopied from a person who works at the VA hospital, and then they were sent out. And of course, it was used to hurt me and my capabilities of running for office. You know, obviously, PTSD, traumatic brain injury from being in explosions and things like that. It was used against me. And now that we know this has happened, we are being denied the opportunity to see all of the people that participated in this. We received the investigation. We had the FOIA for this investigation, but the majority of it is nothing but blank pages because it's redacted. And we want the unredacted version because I want to go after everybody that did this to me.
So first of all, Richard, how can they use some of the records about you to try and derail you? When it comes to something with the campaign, what is the approach to trip you up?
Well, you know, it was amazing because at the time that this started to surface and we realized something was going on was the same time that Donald Trump come to West Virginia, stood on a podium and called Richard Ojeda a stone cold crazy wacko. And, you know, did he have access to look at these records? Is that one of the reasons why we're being denied the ability to see who participated in this? We believe wholeheartedly that, of course, the majority of the people that are going to be on this are going to be part of the GOP in West Virginia. And I deserve the right to see who did this to me.
The one name that we have, or at least that I'm not sure if it was directly given to you before they found out, but Jeffrey S. Miller was the particular person who actually committed the, I guess, the theft of your records and the distribution. Is there a connection with the campaign? Because you were running against Carol Miller in that election.
They say that they're not related, but he has bought two cars from her dealership and speaks politics with someone from that dealership. And if you think that he never showed that person my records, then, you know, I got a nice piece of oceanfront property I can sell you in Utah.
So, what's the approach? Because we see a lot of things with redacted records and everything taken out and making sure the information isn't passed along, which we were just talking about earlier with President Trump and the whistleblower situation. What recourse can you take to get that changed? Is that something that maybe, of course, can't be given publicly, but since it's again about your records, what can you do? How do you make that change?
Well, right now, we're hoping that, you know, national eyes look at this, because right now it's really just local newspapers in West Virginia that are speaking about it. But this needs to go nationally. You know, when you have a person, I did nothing. You know, I served this nation. I never pushed one single bill that put a single penny in my pocket. The only problem that I have is the fact, apparently, I'm a Democrat. And, you know, you have these people that claim to say they support veterans. But the truth is, in reality, it's only the veterans that are on their side politically. If you're not on their side politically, apparently you're up fair game for attack.
So I think also check what September 3rd you were testifying about this in court. Did you feel any kind of shift or movement on this?
No, not really. On December the 9th, he is going to be sentenced, and I get the opportunity to stand up in court, and I get to give a speech, and I'm going to give a scathing speech as to what was done to me. I ran a phenomenal congressional campaign, raised $3 million, and lost to a person who never campaigned, and the only thing she said was, "I'll do whatever Trump wants."
Have you had a chance to, I would assume this isn't the first time maybe even Jeffrey Miller's involved or maybe anyone else in another side of the political aisle that would do something like this. Have you found anyone else that potentially, I mean, veterans may run in different capacities all the time, that you found this has happened to as well?
Well, there was five other veterans that had their records, illegally looked into. And right now, you know, I don't know who those five people are, but I'm assuming that they have already been alerted as to this investigation.
So when it comes to things like that, like you said, they went after you and tried to go after your capacity to lead. Is there any other reason that this, something else about someone's medical history besides just what they approached you with? would cause people to think, hey, we don't want to have him represent us?
Well, you know, I think that what you're going to find is that some of these people that had their records looked into possibly work for or on the staff of other Democrats. Mm.
No. Richard, Francesca Fiorentini here. Hi, I have one question for you, which is, what's been the response of the VA, and are you concerned about their ability to protect your privacy? And where does it go from here on that front?
Well, as of right now, we FOIA'd the VA, and they gave us this, you know, the VA is supposed to be working to protect me. And right now, from what we feel, they're doing everything in their power to keep me from getting the information that I deserve. I deserve the right to know who did this to my records.
Right. And to have your records protected in the future and the records of other veterans.
Absolutely. You know, the VA in West Virginia is upside down. We've got, you know, Clarksburg, where you have cases of murder right now showing up. You've got sexual assaults in Beckley, West Virginia. And in Huntington, West Virginia is where my records were stolen. So, you know, there needs to be something, you know, the leadership of the VA in West Virginia needs to look at the people that they actually employ that protect the veterans.
Is there, so, I mean, is this based on the principle of the thing and finding out who's breaking the law to come after you? Or do you also have plans to maybe run again in another capacity to have the opportunity to have your records clear for the next chance?
Well, I would like to see this information come out. I never wanted people to know that I had PTSD and TBI. I never said those things. But it's really sad that the guy that did this, the first thing he said when he stood up and looked at the judge was, I've got PTSD. You know, it amazes me that they attack me and say, oh, he's not fit to serve because he's got PTSD. But when they get caught, they want to cry that they got PTSD. And maybe that was the reason why they do the things that they do. Unacceptable. Yeah. Cowards.
Yeah, I wonder to the degree of the number of veterans that maybe suffer from PTSD, that maybe it'll normalize it more for people to understand what it is that happens to a lot of veterans that come back. And then we a lot of times neglect once they get once they finish serving everyone else in the country.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, good luck, Richard. We thank you for coming on and telling us the story. At least we're going to flesh this out. And as things change, of course, let us know. Reach back out. We want to continue to find out and get to the bottom of this whole thing.
Airborne, thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate you. We shall be back for one more block. I believe there's some. No more fun things. But we definitely have the Department of Education doing more Department of Education things. We'll be right back. The Trump administration's education department, under his handpicked head, Betsy DeVos, has gone into more changes and at least looking to change things with our education system, specifically college universities with Duke and North Carolina. The education department wrote in an August 29th letter to the Duke-UNC Consortium for Middle East Studies that the program disproportionately portrays the positive aspects of Islam. The agency requested that they amend the program by September 22nd, or lose a grant that they've been receiving for almost a decade. This is from the Associated Press. So in that writing, the department wrote that the program places, quote, a considerable emphasis on the understanding of the positive natures of Islam, while there is an absolute absence of any similar focus on the positive aspects of Christianity, Judaism, or any other religion or belief system in the Middle East. So we talked about that September 22nd deadline. So they're supposed to send a revised schedule of activities and describe how each relates to foreign language and national security, of course, the department continued to say.
And this is all basically they would revoke grants that are given from the Department of Education under Title VI that specifically train students in foreign languages and international affairs to advance U.S. national security and economic interests. And it's like $72 million a year to many different language programs that are oftentimes housed under these like Middle East studies departments. So you're basically saying your culture war, which I can't even believe that the Department of Education would actually commit that to paper. The positive aspects of Islam, This is education. No one's talking about positive or negative. You're just learning about religions. You're learning about parts of the world. In different parts of the world, they practice different religions. Like, that already is absolute, like, out of far right Christian nationalist right. propaganda. And that's in our Department of Education. But the point is that now you're saying, okay, you want to study and you want to, like, help out, let's say, peace building in Afghanistan, and you want to learn how to speak Arabic. Well, your funding might be revoked under this new whatever this is.
Ironically, this comes from a conservative administration that likes to talk. I mean, many folks in the conservative movement like to talk about how liberals are looking to undermine our educational system. They're looking to brainwash kids at colleges and universities. How many times have we heard that colleges and universities are the breeding ground for crazy libs to come out and have with crazy ideas and push them on to the rest of the world? When in reality, you're not trying to revoke some grants and funding because there's not enough Christianity-based positive nature being pushed through just these two universities, or is this, are these only two in the country?
Right, it's like you learned about the Crusades, funding revoked. Like, no, this is history, but that's the thing. Again, with back to the Trump administration, everything is partisan. Everything's part of the culture war. They don't like that, as Colbert said, facts have a liberal bias. And they know that when people learn about the world, when they learn about different religions, yeah, they generally have a less negative perspective. Why? Because it's called knowledge and empathy that derives from knowledge.
There's a problem to make sure they said that there's a particular thing that we've brainwashed our folks in our country to believe. Hey, Christianity, everything has been great and fine with that throughout history. What it is, it breeds freedom and liberty, because somehow Christianity is like an American thing and everything else is just evil and foreign. So anytime you want to find out what folks in this administration are up to, think about what they're saying about what others are doing. So whenever they say that people are doing this and pushing this on you and brainwashed you, they're brainwashing you in that very same moment. So there was a point about this that they went into. They pointed specifically to a conference on art and film that these two schools were apparently were using to push too much of this positive Islam. So they said the sheer volume of such offerings highlight a fundamental misalignment between universities' goals and those of the federal government. Why does the federal government have a goal for what colleges and universities are teaching, or even the tone that they think they're taking when it comes to certain things like the cultural background of Islam? Mm-hmm. I don't see how that works.
Because, and I think you've seen this in the courts, in the Supreme Court, in federal courts, nominees. You've seen this throughout this administration. You've seen it in its attitudes towards Israel and Palestine, that this is a very, it's a Christian nationalist government. It's a government that believes in pushing a far right Christian agenda from the highest points of power. And in addition to that, all the anti-choice and homophobic legislation, preventing transgender people from serving in the military, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Potentially the Supreme Court later on, I think this fall, is gonna rule on whether LGBTQ people are protected under the Equal Rights Amendment, right? Like, these are the questions.
This is the conversation we're having now.
These are the conversations that we're having. And so, and just for everyone to recognize, like, this country's 70% Christian, all right? Christianity is not going anywhere. It is fine. It is well protected. There are many different stripes and shades. And of course, this kind of extreme Christianity does not represent all Christianity at all, right? But these kinds of extreme agenda overreaches by this administration just shows you that they are determined to squelch out anyone who isn't basically straight, white, Christian, heteronormative, whatever.
The Education Department spokesperson also came out and rejecting the idea that the idea that they're trying to push so much Christianity over Islam. He said it's patently false that the department is reviewing the program as being too positive on Islam. Remember that thought, because what the department also said was there's considerable emphasis on the positive aspects of Islam while not attempting to similarly demonstrate the positive aspects of Judaism and Christianity. That sounds like you're saying there's too much positive influence of Islam, but not enough on the other ones that you prefer. It's a Rudy Giuliani. You say one thing and then say, no, I never said that. I just said it only 5 seconds ago. It's amazing how this works, but they can fool people. Sorry, we're out of time. Francesca Fiorentini Fridays, make it a thing. Hashtag that.
Yeah.
Post it and tag her in it. John Iadarola will be back next week, and he'll tell you all about the climate situations happening at the climate rally he's at. Thank you for joining us, Francesca.
Thank you, JR.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Iadarola. I'll see you soon.